So let's switch to the wrap-up now, because our number, Franklin and I were talking before we came on about what we think some of the key trends are, and the number, it took us a little while to decide exactly how to title this. The number one trend is the hysteria of global economics. I would describe it as a game of musical chairs, where people are competing desperately for cash flows in a highly leveraged system. You know, so the incentives to get that cash flow are off the charts, because if you don't in a highly leveraged system, you're going to have a mess. And so the competition for the cash flows is getting more and more aggressive, uglier and uglier. And the problem is the competition is getting sufficiently ugly to destroy the total pot of cash available. You know, that gets us back to the lawlessness. So you break down trust, you break down markets, you know, on and on and on. And so it, you know, the nature of the competition is destroying the very cash flow that everybody's competing for. And it reminds me of a quote I've used many times in the Salieri Report when I was in the Bush administration. One of the principal staff said to me, because the competition, the politics internally was the ugliest you've ever seen. And he said to me, "This is nuts. It's like people on a life raft going on a rubber life raft going at each other with razor blades." But that's what we're watching, and that's what the currency wars are. So I think, to me, the last 4 months has really been marked by, not just enormous hysteria in terms of what the fundamental problems are in Spain and Greece, you know, in here and there, or, you know, is China going to stop growing? What's that going to do to America? But real hysteria in terms of people's panic that everything could go to zero tomorrow, whatever everything is.
But think about this, Catherine. That's a near-term phenomenon. That's a new phenomenon. Think about the whole risk-on, risk-off trade. If you watch markets every day the way I do, it is hysterical. It's the course of a person in hysterics, not the course of a person who has reason and vision and some kind of steadfast judgment about where he's going.
Right.
I mean, one day stocks are up. It's schizophrenic. One day stocks are manically happy and shooting up, and everybody's ebullient. And the next day, they're all down in the dumps, and stocks are down 200 points. Markets don't work that way. They shouldn't work that way. But that's that hysteria.
Well, and part of it is you have enormous program trading and leverage trading.
Mm-hmm.
So the float, if you look at the equity markets, the float is way, way down from, the amount of institutional and retail investors versus program trading is at this point tiny. And the amount of short interest, you know, and so pumping and dumping. I was visiting with a company in Portugal, 26%, you know, they're one of the few big cap companies in Portugal. So if you want to short Portugal, they get hammered. 26% of the interest in their stock is short interest.
Ooh.
And I felt like I was talking to the mining stocks back, you know, in 2005. And, you know, it almost makes you wonder what the naked short interest is and what those gains are.
Mm.
So I think the one thing I do think, and it was a wonderful interview we had with Jim Norman where he said, it's not important to be strong, it's just important to be a little bit stronger than everybody else at the table.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a theme I've been talking about for the last couple of months called American Renaissance Fact or Fiction. Because if you look at what's happening in energy and natural gas, there's been an explosion since 2005 in domestic drilling, particularly by the small guys and the independents. And if you look at our reserves, they're exploding. And the natural gas price, somebody said to me 2 weeks ago, the price for natural gas is $15 in China, $7 in Europe, and $2 in the United States. And Norman pointed out that 40% of manufacturing costs in the United States are energy. So that's an incredible competitive advantage. And you're seeing a lot now in the American business community to promote this idea of an American renaissance, one, because of our position in agriculture, but two, because of our now, you know, incredibly growing position in domestic energy and what that could mean to manufacturing. And there, let me just add, there was a great, great 14-page special in The Economist 2 weeks ago called The Third Industrial Revolution, arguing that the latest technology in robotics and 3D printing, et cetera, could start to bring a lot of manufacturing back into the first world, which I believe is absolutely possible. So one of the things I've been telling all the subscribers is American Renaissance fact or fiction, and I don't know, but needless to say, the Americans right now are a little bit stronger than everybody else at the table.
Well, they always have been. but you know, I mean, there's been a move from the inside to transfer American technology and American industry overseas.
Yep.
But the position of strength that the United States has had is so overwhelming in terms of size of the economy and internal market. Most Americans don't realize it. I mean, it's astounding. But then, if you look back at the history of the United States, that's what it's been built on.
Well, but here's what's interesting. The subscriber who asked the question about the election,
mm-hmm.
she says, no matter who does what, the dollar's going down to nearly nothing. I don't agree with that at all. I think, you know, if you look at the relative positions, there is a reasonably strong scenario, I think, that the U.S. can keep the dollar going for quite some time, particularly given what they've accomplished so far in energy in the last 5 years. Now, that's not what a lot of people want to hear, but, you know, this really, I hate to say this really comes down to a military question.
Well, okay. Okay. But, working at the same time as what you're talking about, and not at all against it, I really think that the system that we have is winding down, and I think
yeah.
that you see the future of it in Greece and Spain, where the presupposition has been that you can build a fat nest at government expense for yourself forever. Everybody can do it.
Right.
And clearly there's a point where that can't be done. So now what you're seeing is the real economy is beginning to emerge again. Those people who are not looking for a government handout or a sweet nest, but who are entrepreneurs and who look to make their fortune by serving other people.
Right, just like the two young people I talked to when I got the car. There were two guys I bought my mm-hmm. car from, and all they wanted to talk about was sort of, you know, what their entrepreneurial contribution was going to be. It was quite extraordinary. I think the people who run the dollar system agree with you,
mm-hmm.
which is why I think they've stockpiled gold and are using this opportunity to stockpile even more at your expense. And, you know, because their big question is, how do you get the money from here to there?
Right.
How do we take the capital out of the old model? Because the old model can't last. It obviously can't last. And I think they know that. I think that's why they started to shift money out of North America and Europe aggressively as they did in the 90s, you know, whether you or I like how they did it and what they did. Anyway, so second trend. So first trend, hysteria of global economics. Second one I just have to mention, because, you know, I drive and travel around, is weird weather. The weather is so weird. And everywhere you go, in California, in Portugal, everywhere I've been this, you know, in the first 4 months of this year, it's just everybody's saying the weather is so strange. And I think, you know, if you're not a farmer, weather's not on your mind as much as it is maybe for us folks who live in rural areas, Franklin. And I think we don't appreciate how much impact weird weather has on our psychology.
Well, I think it does. We were observing today that it's about, I guess tonight it's about 50 degrees here, something like that. This is the 8th of May. It ought to be 20 degrees higher.
Right.
It's just astonishing. And yet in March, it got up to 80 degrees, which
right.
shouldn't happen either. So it is weird. And mm-hmm. then you've got widespread drought in various areas, too. And it just doesn't seem to go together. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, I was at a water symposium for a couple of days when restoring the land with water and had time to spend time with Sepp Holzer, who's arguably one of the top permaculturalists in the year. And we're going to try and do a lot more about water in the Solari report, because I think water is really coming to the fore of everybody's consciousness and the importance of sort of living in harmony with water and preserving the water and using it well on your land. Okay, next thing, I don't know if you got it, but something came around, and of course I got many copies of it. It was a story purporting to be an anonymous description of a meeting that an entertainment executive had had in the 90s. Some spooky guys showed up and sort of ordered everybody to turn rap music from something very reasonably pleasant to something very gangster and criminal-oriented. The reason being, they said they were going to, you know, they were introducing all the private prison companies, which is in fact when that happened, and they needed to, you know, significantly increase arrests, so they needed to make it much more politically palatable to do that, and so having rap music and Hollywood basically promote the idea that all, you know, sort of poor black teenagers were gangsters and criminals would be very, very helpful. And so this guy, you know, intimates that this was pretty scary. When some people tried to object, they were thrown out with security guards with guns, and consequently he became discouraged and left the entertainment industry. Anyway, I never posted the story up in the blog because who knows if it's true or not. I do think the gist of it is true, and if you've ever read the Dylan Reed book that I wrote, Dylan Reed and the Aristocracy of Stock Profits, which is up on the internet,
mm-hmm.
Essentially what happened in the 90s, it was very interesting, Franklin, because what happened was in the beginning of the 90s, and it started in the Clinton administration, oddly enough, a lot of the laws got put in place during the Bush administration, but the Clintons really got it going. What they were doing is they would take multi-agency teams, jurisdictional teams, including HUD, that's how I got bumped into it, and they would drop these teams into neighborhoods, so they were doing it in D.C., and they basically round up the kids. So they just drop a SWAT team in the neighborhood, 200 people, 200 enforcement agents with guns, drop in a neighborhood with helicopters, and just round up all the available kids and then put them into jail. And, of course, this was great for the prison stocks. And the Department of Justice started a company called Unicor, which would market the prison labor to the defense contractors. So if you look at, in the meantime, they shut off the appropriations to the public defender's office in D.C. So there were no lawyers to defend the kids. So the kids were basically forced to cop a plea and, you know, ended up in prison. Now, if you look at what was really happening, what we were doing is we were sending stormtroopers into communities, rounding up kids, throwing them in prison in labor camps where they provided cheap labor for the military. Okay, so if you look at what the Nazis did, and if you look at what we were doing, it was the same exact thing. The difference was a great deal of time and money had been spent in engineering the whole system to look reputable. So the kids were drug dealers, and they got convicted in a court of law where they had a jury of their peers, except they never had a jury trial because they all had to cop a plea. You know, on and on and on and on. And a great process was put in place to make this all look legitimate so everybody could think that something was happening other than just rounding up all these kids and using them as slave labor for the military.